For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you so much for joining me for a special Tuesday edition of Fantasy MLB Today. We are a Sports Ethos presentation, of course, and I'm your host, Joe Orrico. You can find me over on Twitter at JoeOrrico99, and you can check out all of our fantasy baseball content at EthosFantasyBB. Our draft guide came out last week. We've been adding new content in every single day. My rankings got a little bit of a facelift over the weekend, so check that all out. There is a description linked inside the episode. But we're going to be continuing with our team previews today, joined by a very special guest. First time having him here on the show. He needs no introduction, really, but he is Derek Van Riper of The Athletic. Derek, thank you so much, man. I really do appreciate you carving out some time today.
Yeah, thanks for having me on, Joe.
I want to give you a chance just to tell anybody who may not know you. I think probably everybody does, but just give a little bit of a background on who you are and what you do.
Sure. Yeah, I work for The Athletic. I have actually been a part of the fantasy sports space for 18 years now, I think, which is, it feels like a lifetime. I think sports media doesn't usually let people hang around this long, so I've been very fortunate so far. 13 years at RotoWire, 5 at The Athletic. Most of what I do these days is just focused on podcasting. Rates and Barrels is the main show that I'm a part of. I make some appearances on The Athletic Baseball Show. So a lot of fun over there. You know, Rates and Barrels is a fantasy baseball show that I think people who don't play fantasy baseball can still enjoy, which has been very surprising to me to learn that over the years, but actually makes me feel good because I've always looked at fantasy baseball as this thing I love that I wish more people would enjoy. And I think we're starting to get people who listen because they like the advanced stats and the analysis, and they like Eno, they like me, or whatever it is they like about the show that keeps bringing them in. They keep coming back and they send us an email, they send us a message and say, hey, I've been listening for a few years, I'm back into fantasy baseball for the first time, or I'm trying fantasy baseball for the first time. So it's great because we're getting people to try something that we love. And I didn't quite set out to do that, but I'm glad it's working that way.
Yeah, I was listening to a podcast recently and they're talking about how people are generally not going to fantasy baseball as much as they used to. So it's good to find different ways that we can bring them in, whether it's through the advanced stats or bringing the younger crowd somehow. However we're doing it, however you guys are doing it, you are succeeding. Rates and Barrels does a great job of straddling the real life baseball talk and the fantasy. So that's definitely a must listen. And then you guys got Trevor May on the show. That's awesome.
Yeah, Trevor's great. We were really excited when we realized we had an opportunity to work with him. He's on every Friday with us. We're going to do a live stream on our YouTube channel, 1 o'clock Eastern, if anybody wants to check it out live. Of course, it turns into a pod after the fact, but it's really fun. We try to make it interactive. We try to get some Q&A in there every single week. And if you haven't followed Trevor, seen him, heard him somewhere already, he's one of the most honest former players I think I've ever been around. So just to have that sort of candor from someone who was recently a part of the game, but also who loves it and nerds out about it the way that we do, like that's just a perfect fit for us.
Yeah, that's incredible. And we know Trevor May last year was a huge hero for a lot of fantasy teams down the stretch. I think it was 13, 14 second half saves. So he went out an absolute hero for us fantasy players as well. How's draft season looked for you as a whole? I know we were in Tout Wars together drafting right beside each other. But outside of that, and maybe even including that, how have your drafts looked so far?
Yeah, 5 drafts in so far, both Tout and Labor online. This is my first year playing in the Solds League, as it's known, right? We've got innings pitched instead of wins. We've got saves plus holds instead of saves. And I think all the Tout Wars leagues, if I'm not mistaken, all use OBP in place of average, at least all the Roto ones do. And I'm used to the OBP twist. This was the first time I played Solds, at least in an industry league before. I think I may have played one with some friends a long time ago. Season overall is going pretty well. I mean, I'm getting the different combinations of players I want, which is basically just working through different builds that I like. So I've tried Pocket Aces, did that in the mixed labor draft. I think it came together pretty well. I've done different things where I've kind of punted speed until the middle and late rounds and feel like I find enough bags later to make that work. And had the TGFBI draft where I don't know how often this happens. It seems like it's once every 10 years. It seemed like I got all of my guys, which you never really build a team that way because your guys don't necessarily fit in Roto on the same team. You just like a bunch of players. You have to be in the right position to get them. And I happened to be at the wheel, pick 15. And maybe it was just being able to take two players at a time every time that made that kind of flow the way that it did. But I'm curious if that team is actually good. Like, I love it, but it could easily be my worst team. And that would kind of be heartbreaking just because of how much I like the players I put on it.
Yeah, TGFBI was my, I think, 10th or 11th draft of the year. One of the final ones I'm going to do. And I was in the same kind of boat of just, you know, the ADP is 213. I'm up at 197. I don't care. It's the one of the last drafts. I'm gonna get my guys. And I do look at that team as this is kind of a classic me squad. And for better or for worse, we'll see how that does turn out. The Tout Wars draft was very interesting. I decided to do it on a live stream. I did it with John Legaza, the two of us both in the league. We're kind of just going back and forth, which did help actually just to talk through some picks. But it was tricky. I don't have a lot of experience with saves plus holds or on base percentage, really. I've been a classic 5x5 guy, started off with points leagues, moved to 5x5, but OBP, saves plus holds, it's going to be a different kind of beast, and we're going to have to see, because I got Kevin Gausman as my SP1, so I'm kind of holding my breath here as a Blue Jay fan and for this league to see what's going to end up happening here with Mr. Gausman. But we're going to be talking about third base today. Third base is always one of my favorite positions. I love talking about it. I don't know why. There's just so many names that I really love to go through. Before we get into the individual players and the tiers, do you have an overall philosophy on third base this season? Is there a way you're approaching it in general?
Yeah, I'm trying not to punt it completely. I think it's one of those positions where you don't want to leak playing time. There's a few spots where the way the player pool is shaped, you're going to have a little bit of a weakness. Like your fourth and fifth outfielders probably aren't going to be 600 plate appearance players, right? You accept that. Your second catcher, unless you invest really early in the position, probably won't get you more than 450 plate appearances. Third base is a place where you should be able to find someone who is a high volume player in the middle of a lineup who can at least get you power, right? There's a few guys that run at the position, but the core offensive skills of most third basemen are relatively similar. So I try to live in a way where I've got at least someone in the top 10 at the position on every team. And then I'm comfortable with a lot of the guys that we'll probably talk about as like third tier and even the last acceptable crowd. I think a lot of those guys are decent as corner options, but I don't want that first third base spot, the primary third base spot on my roster to be a weakness, because I think you can actually lose a lot in counting stats if you wait too long to address the position.
Yeah, it's a very important position. I completely agree that your general prototypical third baseman is the 30 home run, 100 RBI type of guy at the top. There's not a lot of speed. There's not really a lot of speed at the position outside of a few names we're going to get into. Let's start with this first tier, the very expensive names, the elite guys. Going from Jose Ramirez down to Gunnar Henderson. So Jose Ramirez, Austin Riley, Rafael Devers, Ellie De La Cruz, and Gunnar Henderson. These are all top two round picks. Sometimes you're getting Gunner in the third, but these are the elite cream of the crop guys you have to pay up for. Anybody that you like or dislike more than the field in this group, Derek?
You know, the guy that I like that I never get is Austin Riley. There's nothing in that profile that gives me any real cause for concern. And I think when you look at how good the Atlanta lineup is, you know, it's much like the Dodger lineup where your runs, your RBIs are going to be well above average. I love the way that team doesn't give days off to their core regulars. Those guys are high, high volume players. For some reason, Austin Riley can consistently kind of pops as like a top 10, top 15 hitter by projection, and he just sort of falls by the wayside. I think this happens to a lot of players who don't steal bases in the first two rounds. We have this tendency with those early round guys to say, I want a five category player. You're one of those guys that doesn't steal a lot of bases. You kind of get ignored, even though people are still drafting you there. So I like Austin Riley a lot. I guess he's the sort of player I would describe as more likely to end up my team in an auction where I can just go out and get whatever combination of players I want than somebody I'm going to take in a snake draft where I have to be in the back half of the order and be in the right position for it to make a lot of sense for my build.
Yeah, I agree with you. I took him in TGFBI. That was my first share of Austin Riley. I paired him with Shohei Ohtani. Steals are very interesting to me, and I think what we'll probably talk about a little bit throughout the show. I'm prioritizing them to some extent, but I also think there's a lot of guys that we don't talk about as much going in the late 100s, even throughout the entire 200 ADP range, that are just 15, 20, 25 type of steal guys. So if I don't get a Bobby Witt, a Corbin Carroll, a Julio, I don't really mind making that up a little bit later on, and not necessarily in the second round. So I can take a Riley and then go for Jaren Duran and a couple of those types to kind of piece it together. I feel like a lot of us, and I'm guilty of this too, think that we need to have steals leaving the first couple of rounds. Is that something that you are subscribing to a lot? Because I feel like a lot of what I hear is if you don't have steals by the end of round two, you're screwed. And I don't necessarily really buy into that.
I don't buy into that either. I think the environment from 2023 is maybe just the sign of some things to come. We may see even more steals in the pool in 2024 because the league-wide success rate was above 80% last season. So the new rules opened up running by volume, but the success rate being as high as it is probably means teams spent the offseason looking at their rosters, looking at different ways to exploit the weaknesses of opposing defenses. And I think we're going to see steals go up one more notch, and we're going to have unexpected sources of steals kind of popping up throughout the middle and bottom parts of the player pool. But also, I think one thing that a lot of younger players will do compared to older players is run. Younger players are the guys that often come up into the pool over the course of the season as well. So if you're a little bit light in the stolen base category, I think you can actually find steals on the waiver wire relative to, you know, finding saves on the pitching side. I don't think it costs you nearly as much to bid on a lot of the players that get playing time and actually chip in a meaningful way in that category. So I'm comfortable taking an approach similar to what you described. You know, I think there is a point around like pick 150, 175 where the truly established sources of stolen bases start to dry up and you start taking on a lot more risk. You get imbalanced players by category, guys that have no power that steal bases, like a Stephen Kwan type player. If right. you wait too long, those players become tricky to build around in Roto. But there's plenty of guys in that round 6 to round 10 range that I like for speed. So if I don't have any speed or if I have less speed than everybody else after those first 5 rounds, I'm not worried about it. And that opens up more strategy opportunities for me, whether it's pocket aces, going aggressive on power, maybe pushing an early closer. I like having that sort of flexibility to build around.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants. They all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Yeah, I agree with you. If you are going to go for a speedy third baseman early at the end of the first round, I really like Jose Ramirez. I don't think we've talked a lot about Jose Ramirez as a community. Last year, there were drafts where he was the first overall pick. Plenty of them. He was one of the 4 or 5 guys that was consistently going at number one. He's not really drastically any different than he was a year ago. I know the RBIs came down substantially. He lost 46 RBI, which is just an insane number. But he's still got roughly the same power, the same speed. He's still a good batting average asset. I think that lineup might surprise us a little bit. Are we too heavily discounting Jose Ramirez, you think, to the point where he's now a second rounder? Or is this kind of justified based on the lineup around him?
I think it's somewhat justified. I think the hardest thing about making a decision in the first round right now is that it feels like there's probably 20 guys that could be in the first round. And there's only in 12 team or 15 team league, there's only that many spots. Yeah. But I think with Ramirez, the track record's phenomenal. He had one bad half like 3-4 years ago and bounced back from that and has shown no real signs of aging since. He's not really showing signs of slowing down in the base pass. He's still getting to the power. As bad as that Guardians lineup was last season, let's assume they're going to use Bo Naylor as their primary catcher for all of this season. And let's assume we're going to see a lot of Kyle Manzardo. And let's assume there's even a possibility we'll see a good bit of Chase DeLauder, maybe by the second half of the season. So I think we're going to have more impactful bats around him. Even a guy like Brian Rocchio, who's maybe a better real-life player than fantasy player, could be good for someone like Jose Ramirez, because if Rocchio is a good table setter at the top of the lineup, if he's getting on base at a 350, 360 clip, that could help with the RBI count a little bit. So yeah, I don't really understand why exactly Ramirez is available at the 1-2 turn, but he's part of the reason why I'd have no problem picking at the back of the order this year. You can get some combination of Ramirez, maybe Yordan Alvarez, Bryce Harper. Like when you get two of those three guys as your first two picks, you've got a fantastic offensive foundation.
Yeah, I was muted there, as I'm known to do occasionally. We both like a couple of guys in this tier, but I think somebody that's very polarizing in this tier for me is, and for pretty much everybody, is Ellie De La Cruz. What do we do? What do we do with Ellie De La Cruz? When I talked with Jeff Erickson, we did our Reds preview earlier in the winter, I should say. He was interested, but I thought Jeff might talk me into Ellie, and he didn't talk me into Ellie. And I don't think that's because he doesn't like him or anything. I think it's everybody has the same problem. It's that his ADP is 23. Are you willing to take him in the second round? Are you willing to hope for the best and take that leap?
I haven't done it yet. And there are some very smart folks I know who don't podcast and don't write about fantasy baseball, but they've given me some ideas as to just how aggressively they might target Ellie. And it's interesting because when you crunch the numbers, you could see him easily finishing top 10, and you don't have to pay a top 10 price to get him. I don't draft him in the second round only because I think the players that are usually there when I'm looking at Ellie are also very good. And the problem I have with any kind of young player versus the older players you're considering, the more established players you're considering right next to them, is a lot of times you're just hoping that that young player can be as good as the veteran that you're taking instead. And you're maybe paying a premium because there's a possibility that the young player is better. So it's just sort of like a fundamental, I don't know, like, are you buying in for the breakout and paying, are you paying the extra dollars for it or extra draft slot for it? In the case of Ellie, I got him in that Solds league we were talking about at 3.9. Because it was OBP, maybe he fell. Because it was an industry room instead of like an FBC room, maybe that was part of it too. I think there's a little bit of hesitation around him. But regardless of the Noelvi Marte suspension doesn't matter for me as far as Ellie's appeal goes. Like, you either like him because you think the power and speed are going to be there and the playing time is going to be there all year, or you're afraid he can be in the bottom 30 order and possibly get demoted. I don't think he's going to get demoted. I think he's a good enough shortstop, good enough defensive player at third base if they move him over there, where his glove keeps him in the lineup. I just think you're giving up a lot of established value by taking Ellie at ADP. He has to fall a little bit. Now, if I'm picking in that first overall position in a 15-team league, he slides to that 2-3 turn. I've already got Acuna as my first bat. I'm thinking a little carefully about it there, because the handful of hitters that go in the second half of round two, let's assume they're all gone, and you know, maybe I'm not wild about the pitching that's available. I don't want to push somebody up. Maybe in that situation, I'd start to think about it. But I think that even makes more sense to me if I'm in a league that has an overall component, where being right in a big, big way comes with a massive payoff.
Yeah, I was going to go that exact same route, that overall contest, you're going to see Ellie in the second. If you're looking at Yahoo ADP and CBS League's ADP, he's not going in the second round because they're not competing for an overall. They're just trying to win their league, and that's where I want Ellie. In my home league, I'll probably have Ellie because it's a fourth or a fifth rounder as opposed to a second. So I do want in on, you know, just in case he does go 30, 70 or whatever the hell he can possibly do. But I'm not paying a second round price to find that out. That's just a little too much for me. I think we covered that first tier in pretty good depth. Let's talk about the second tier, and we'll start with somebody who was kind of in that first tier by ADP at the start of the offseason. We're going from Royce Lewis down to Josh Young. So Lewis, Machado, Ha-Seong Kim, Alex Bregman, Nolan Arenado, Spencer Steer, and Josh Young. What are your thoughts on this tier? Is this a place where you like to go shopping this year, Derek, or is this more of an avoid kind of area for you? For me, this is probably somewhere where I generally target pitching and outfield, but what are your thoughts on this range?
Yeah, it's a pretty big range. So I think what I do with my build determines where I'm interested with this group. I think Royce Lewis fits for me really well on the pocket aces teams. That's where I see the appeal, because you're kind of chasing excellent per game production in a small sample. It's a little bit cheaper than Ellie. It's a different profile than Ellie, because the bags alone from Ellie De La Cruz could be extremely valuable. But Royce Lewis, if Royce Lewis did what he did over 500 plate appearances, he'd be right there next to Ellie De La Cruz. He'd be in every would you rather toss up in the second round. So what I've noticed is if I build a more balanced roster, I don't feel any sort of internal pressure to go get the high upside bat that's available in that range. And the other guy that happens to be there sometimes is Nolan Jones in the outfield, right? You kind of look at Nolan Jones and say, oh, okay, I'm light on hitting, but I need a guy that could do everything. Nolan Jones can probably do everything. That's the reasoning for ending up there. I think more often than not, in like a neutral build, if I go hitter pitcher, if I just kind of got good balance going, I'm actually hoping to go after one of Bregman or Nolan Arenado. I think the older, boring guys at this position are the players that I like the most because you're getting really good value. Manny Machado goes like 30 picks earlier than Bregman and Arenado. He's better than both of them, but I don't think he's 30 picks better. This is just one of those snake draft value sort of things where players have to fill in those spaces and they fall just far enough where I feel like you're getting a discount, relatively speaking. So love Bregman and Arenado. Machado could end up on some teams in the right build, but I haven't been really targeting him, even though you're getting a nice discount this year. And like, there's kind of an void for me on Ha-Seong Kim. I think he's a great real life player. I'm skeptical of the power. I like having guys that can play three spots. That's wonderful in season, especially if you're in a draft and hold league. Just having that flexibility is really nice. But the underlying skills leave a lot to be desired for me. And I have a hard time drafting players that I don't think are great offensive real life players in the first five or six rounds. Like I struggle with that in a really big way. And I think that's exactly what Kim is. I think you can find players with very similar skills to Kim. Maybe sometimes at only one of those three positions, you can find those guys a few rounds later. So I tend to wait on players like that.
Yeah. I think the reason everybody is paying up is because of the stolen bases. It's not because of anything else he did. Now he did show some power in Korea, but we haven't seen that translating over as much as maybe we would have thought. He's not somebody that I'm targeting. The Padres lineup has gotten worse without Soto now. He was somebody who I think was kind of having a best case scenario year last year anyway. If he was only second base eligible, only shortstop eligible, I feel like he's going 50, 60 picks later. I don't love this tier outside of the guys that you mentioned as well. Bregman and Arenado, those are the two guys that I do target in a lot of rooms. I've gotten two of each, I think. Bregman is just so undervalued, I think. And I'm not even I don't particularly like the Astros or Bregman or anything, but I'm going to be drafting him as much as I can over these next couple weeks. You're talking about 25 homers, 100 runs, 100 RBI, good batting average. I don't know why he's going a pick 91. I don't understand it. He doesn't have the power that he had a few years back, but he's still very easily a top 75 player if he stays healthy. And same with Arenado. I think Arenado and Bregman are about the same player, except Bregman, you're going to bank on some more runs from him probably because that's just what we've seen the last few years, better lineup. But these guys are... I really don't understand it. I think maybe part of the thing with Arenado is that the narrative around the Cardinals last year was that they were just terrible. They were awful, which they were not great. But I think a lot of it does come down to the pitching. The lineup wasn't that bad. And I think people are kind of discounting Arenado, Goldschmidt, maybe even Wilson Contreras because the team was not great. Am I crazy there? Or do you think I might be onto something?
No, I think you're onto something. That's 1-9. That's one of the better lineups in the National League. I mean, they've got a few young guys between Walker and Mason Wynn. I know Newt Barr's banged up again right now. It seems like he just has some bad luck on the injury front. Like the ribs are the problem right now. They got a handful of guys that could get like better. I mean, Nolan Gorman could still get better, right? So you take that group, you put Goldie and Arenado and the kind of core guys. Wilson Contreras to me is a really, really steady player behind the plate. That's a great lineup to be a part of. And no arguments against that whatsoever. I do think the Nolan Arenado runs scored stuff is sort of interesting. Like I actually prefer Bregman to Arenado for that reason. Yeah. But it's a small gap for sure.
That's kind of the only real differentiator between them is probably 10 or 15 runs. Other than that, I think it's like the Spider-Man meme. Mm-hmm. Those guys are pretty, pretty similar. Now, I had included Josh Young in the earlier tier, but now that he's been banged up, since I put this together, he's come down a little bit in terms of his price. But this next tier is Josh Young through Jaime Candelario. So Young, Jake Berger, Alec Bohm, Hayes, Muncy, Paredes, Garcia, Michael Garcia, and Jaime Candelario. It's about a 60 or so pick range here. This is the third grouping of guys. Do you find yourself clicking a lot of these names in your drafts, DVR?
This is a group that I really seem to avoid for the most part. Yeah. Because if I didn't get someone really early, if I didn't get one of the elite options, I probably went ahead and made a point to get one of Bregman or Arenado. And if I don't have someone by that point, then I've kind of gone outside my circle of trust. I think there are good players in this range, but I think you've given something up in terms of skills in most of these cases. You're definitely taking on more risk with just about everybody here. I mean, you look, if Josh Jung were healthy, I think he does belong at the back of the tier above, because I see some similarities in what Josh Jung brings to the table now and what Austin Riley was doing at the beginning of his career. And I realize, you know, Riley was a little bit younger when he broke in, but I think because of the injuries that Josh Jung has had, we can look at him and say he's probably not a completely finished product. There's probably one more level there in terms of getting that K rate down, maybe drawing a few more walks and getting a little bit more balance, possibly getting up to that 30 home run range. And that Rangers lineup is really good. Have not been drafting him while he's been hurt, though. I've been kind of waiting to see if we get some more good news, and maybe he'll find his way onto a couple of my rosters at the later part of this draft season. The player that I think I'm really waffling the most on in this range is actually Jake Berger. We saw the K rate drop during his time in Miami. I think the power's legit. I don't think anyone's doubting that. He can hit 30 home runs, even playing half his games in Miami. They don't really have anybody who's going to push him for playing time. I just don't know if I trust that the improved K rate is actually, if that's actually who he's going to be. Is he going to be a 21, 22% K rate guy over a full season? Is he going to split the difference between his time with the Marlins and his time with the White Sox last year? That's where the projections go. So I think that's the safest place to kind of, you know, nudge your own numbers. But I find myself looking at Berger and finding reasons not to take him. Sometimes it's because there's other pitchers in that range that I like, or maybe I'm just looking at other positions where I'm looking for speed, and Berger doesn't offer that. So I'm not necessarily looking for a cheap source of 30 homers. But do you look at Berger as a guy that will be decent or maybe even somewhat helpful in deeper leagues for batting average? Because that K rate improvement was something I did not see coming.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
I think he's maybe not helpful, but he's neutral for what he does. Most guys who are going to give you that 30 homer, 90 RBI type of template, they're generally not going to be 20 some odd percent K rate guys with a 250, 260 batting average. So even though it's not going to be like a massive asset for you, it's positive enough where I think it is something that is worth noting. He's not going to be a 215 hitter with those 35, potentially even maybe 40 home runs. There is a lot of power. I know a lot of smart people have really, really been in on Jake Berger this offseason. I haven't actually drafted him much. I think maybe once or twice. But I do see the appeal. I definitely see the appeal based on what he did down the stretch. I've heard a lot of people talk about Ke'Bryan Hayes. I'm not fully sold. I saw people put in MVP bets on Ke'Bryan Hayes. I know there were long shot kind of lottery ticket bets. I just don't see, I mean, we're not going to get into that because that's just kind of crazy, but I don't see him being a massive return on your investment here. His ADP is about 165. People say that there's more power. I don't know if there's more power. Is he going to sacrifice some of the speed because of it? Because we've kind of seen that a little bit in recent years with Ke'Bryan. I don't know. I'm just not really that interested this year. I see so many people talk about him, but Derek, are you interested in Ke'Bryan Hayes at all?
I still like him as a does a little bit of everything player that can be a good fit on some builds. I'm not sure I trust that everything's going to click for him all at once. Like, I wonder if he does, if he gets the power for a full season, then maybe the speed does taper off a little bit. That happens a lot. You hit more home runs, you have fewer opportunities to steal bases, so you don't run as much. Do we trust the batting average at this point? I mean, he's been good throughout his entire career at avoiding strikeouts. He's always made hard contact. So like the batting average seems like it's solid. Like it's probably not going to dip below, I don't know, the 244 in 2022 especially seemed kind of fluky, right? That's like the absolute low-end outcome. But more likely, he's good in the category, if not very good. He's going to play every day because of his glove. If we like the lineup even a little more than last year, the counting stats could improve. Like, it's an okay profile. I just don't see that that certainty some people have about a breakout. We've been waiting for it for a few years. I think if what we see is what we get, and now it's just nudging him up over 600 plate appearances, that's actually pretty good. And that's fair price where he's going right now. But he hasn't really been a target, hasn't really been a fade for me. It just looks like a little more of the same. And the story is really weird, too, about him working with the double-A hitting coach kind of behind the other coaches. The double-A coach got let go, but that coach was kind of credited with helping unlock some of the power that we saw last year. So I don't really know where exactly we go from here, but I'm expecting more of like a small step forward rather than like a massive jump where he's a 25-plus homer guy that also gets you 20 bags.
Yeah, well, adding O'Neill Cruz back to that lineup will certainly help out a little bit. The guy that I've been looking into a lot more recently in this range is because he's kind of become an industry darling is Michael Garcia. I see a ton of blurbs, a ton of people talking about him. I mean, you can see it. Good batting average. The stolen bases are excellent. You could easily see 30 steals from him. And I think the power is not great, but maybe you could potentially be looking at 10 homers, 30 stolen bases with a 280 batting average out of Garcia if things go right. Not a great lineup, but do you have a lot of interest in Garcia?
I mean, I kind of like him as a cheaper version of Ke'Bryan Hayes, as long as people don't push up his ADP all that much. And I think if you were building a team in a backwards kind of way, as I like to call it, where you're power heavy early, you're chasing the speed late, Garcia is a possible fit that works really well on the corner. I think there are hints that there's more power there, much like there is with Ke'Bryan Hayes. It's just a question of how long we have to wait for it. I think supporting cast, maybe we like the Royals lineup a little better than what the Pirates have, even though both of those lineups are probably better now than they were a year ago. I think I'm running into a problem with Michael Garcia where someone in the room seems to like him more than me. That's the problem as far as keeping him off my rosters. But I see a lot of the same things. And if we all fell in love with Ke'Bryan Hayes 3 or 4 years ago, kind of makes sense why we're starting to fall for Michael Garcia.
Yeah, that's the problem, you know, with everybody sharing their favorite players on Twitter. It's that you start to get in the draft rooms and, that 220 ADP becomes 210 and 200. And then pretty soon it's 185. And then you're just out at that point. His minimum is 181 over the month of March. So he's definitely been shooting up a little bit. But yeah, this range in general, you're more looking at your corner infield targets. If you're waiting until now to get a starting third baseman on your roster, especially those deeper rosters, it's probably not going to go so well for you. But if you're waiting until this very last tier, then for sure things are not going to be looking great if these are your starters at the position. Starting off with, we can mention him, I guess. It's Noelvi Marte. I don't think there's much really to discuss right now. But Marte, Ryan McMahon, Luis Renjifo, Junior Caminero, Matt Chapman, Colt Keith, Willie Castro, Eugenio Suarez. These are kind of like the last acceptable names as CI type bench, maybe assets. The one that really kind of stands out in this range for me is Matt Chapman. He's been kind of massively discounted because he didn't have a home all offseason. And granted, he wasn't great last year. I saw it firsthand in Toronto, but he's not 280 ADP type of bad. I mean, he still should be probably going 100 picks higher, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I know the park factors difference between Jamer Candelario and Matt Chapman. It's pretty huge, right? Great American Ballpark versus Oracle. If you took similar skills, put two players in each of those parks, you'd expect the player in Cincinnati to do better. Like, that's just a reasonable expectation. But I think Matt Chapman has more raw power. We didn't see it on full display last year because he was not pulling the ball as much as he has in the past. The big debate for me with Matt Chapman, we've talked about it a little bit on Rates and Barrels, was the way he was hitting the ball last year, was it by design or was it the result of some kind of mechanical flaw or possible loss in bat speed? What we landed on was it's hard to argue that he's really like lost a lot of bat speed if he's still hitting the ball that hard. Like, to hit the ball hard, you have to swing the bat hard. So if the barrel rates are still good, and the hard hit rates are still good, and they were, the reasonable assumption is it's probably more of a mechanical adjustment or a timing sort of thing, where if he can just get out in front a little more often, he can go back to pulling the ball more consistently. And we did have a finger injury in the second half that cost him some time, so maybe that was a factor as well. But I think Chapman, if I remember correctly, and you can probably speak to this in more detail, Chapman was great in April. And then kind of faded right after that. Just one of those guys that got off to a fantastic start, cooled off and then had an even worse second half because of the injury. I see him as a max volume player in a range where a lot of these guys have questions about being able to play every day or even having a job at the beginning of the season. So that's what makes him stand out to me. Like, I think he's a good value. I wouldn't even be surprised if he jumped 50 spots in ADP in the final couple of weeks of draft season, because he has a team. He has a chance now in spring training to hit a handful of homers, get us all excited about everything again. But I've liked him all draft season. I thought he was probably the most undervalued third baseman in the pool up to this point.
He's one of the few examples of a guy you could actually, I mean, it's, you're playing chicken at this point, but if you did wait and have Matt Chapman as your starting third baseman, if you can pull that off, I think that's pretty sweet. Mm-hmm. Take care of a lot of other things in those first 250 or so picks. Yeah, to your point, in April of last season, Matt Chapman, we were all just blown away. We were thinking, oh my God, 40 home runs is incoming. He's going to be on the MVP ballot. I was on in this league with Bogman and Welsh. I think it was last, probably the first week of May, and we had a discussion. I'd have to look through the sheet to see what it was exactly, but can Matt Chapman be the best third baseman in baseball? And we were talking about it as if it was a possibility. And my God, just thinking about the way the season went after that, it certainly did not go that way, but I think he's too heavily discounted at this point. He's still 25 home runs, should be 80 runs, 80 RBI type of guy. That batting average was not great. Nothing was great last year. I think we kind of just have to throw the season away from that perspective. Somebody else that I've kind of been landing on in this range a lot is DJ LeMahieu, just as a bench piece, once or twice as my corner infielder. We have so many different places that project lineups now, and pretty much all of them project DJ LeMahieu as the Yankees leadoff hitter. And if you're right in front of Juan Soto and Aaron Judge and you're going past pick 300, I'm going to be interested in you. That's all there is to it, really. I don't think he's DJ LeMahieu of Colorado anymore. But if he can be a 260 hitter batting in front of those guys, I'll be pretty happy. Are you got any interest in LeMahieu this year, Derek?
In really deep leagues, at least 15 teams, I really like both LeMahieu and Cronenworth as just flexible, undervalued options that should play a lot. With you on the combo of, you know, Soto and Judge being behind DJ LeMahieu, if he stays in that leadoff spot, that's a great spot to be. I do think there's a little bit of risk that he falls out of it. It's a question of just how much 2023 was real. I mean, given his age, it's a possible like sign of true decline, right? He's 35 years old now. If he has a 327 OBP at the end of April, maybe he falls in the lineup. If he gets off to a good start, maybe he keeps that spot. And as long as he's playing well, he can continue to have that spot. They seem to like him. They still have, three more years left on that deal. So they're probably going to have to find a way to maximize him in a way that's a little bit different, where they say, okay, you're going to play 85% of the time. I wonder if that's part of the equation too, as some of their other younger infielders become a bigger part of their plan, if LeMahieu starts to yield some playing time. But maybe in your late 30s, not playing every day could be a good thing. Your per game output could be better getting a little bit of extra rest. I mean, with LeMahieu, we've seen an approach that initially fit Yankee Stadium really well, whereas a righty with that oppo power, he could take advantage of the short porch in right field. He's still doing that a little bit better than I would have expected, like 15 homers last year. If you would have asked me how many home runs did DJ LeMahieu hit last year, I said, well, 8, 10. He wasn't very good. Like, no, he hit 15. Like, he still has that ability. And then the K rate jumping last year, like, I don't know if I buy like that much decline in 1 year. He went from a 13% strikeout rate to a 22% strikeout rate. That's a massive jump, even though 22% is not a problem. I just think 22%, anything close to that range, is a problem for a player with his skill set, because he doesn't steal bases. He needs to put a lot of balls in play. He needs to basically boost up counting stats by staying healthy, being in the lineup every day. It's very oatmeal-y, but I do like it for deeper leagues especially. I don't know if I'd want him on a roster in like a 12-team league, because I don't know if there's enough ceiling there at this point in his career, even with that really good opportunity. But to your point, you know, you said like maybe you could wait on Chapman as your starting third baseman. I think you could get away with that, especially in a 15-team league. I think what I've done in situations where I've waited too long at third base, and that happened, I think it was TGFBI actually, I had a Eugenio Suarez as a fallback option because he's got similar skills. I think he's got more collapse risk. He's a couple years older than Chapman. There's a little more swing and miss. At least there's a whiff of that, like jumping up a little quicker than we've seen with Chapman. But he's another guy that's going to play a lot. He still gets to the power consistently. The lineup around him is pretty good. Ticks a lot of boxes where you could do a lot worse having waited too long at the position than Eugenio Suarez.
The problem is once you get to that point, you need to jump them around or two, because if you miss out on both of them, then you're ending up with LeMahieu as your starting third baseman, and then you're wondering what happened half the season. Is there anybody else kind of in this last grouping that you have any interest in? Somebody that I've drafted a lot hoping for a bounce back is Brett Beatty, but that's just because he's been really cheap. Anybody here that's been piquing your interest this year?
Yeah, so Ryan McMahon goes a little earlier than some of these guys. I like him as just a simple glue guy, middle and corner eligibility because of second and third base. I mean, I think what you see is what you get, but that's fine where he's going, well outside the pick 200 range. I'm intrigued by Colt Keith. I mean, he's a guy that's third base eligible now. They're going to play him at second. He's really hit everywhere he's been in that Tiger system. Another guy that, you know, isn't going to necessarily offer a lot in stolen bases, but will probably be good on average, very good in power. Home park works against him a little bit, but I think he could be in a really prominent spot in this Tigers lineup. And you look at the way they're built, they're getting better, but there aren't so many cornerstone players already on the roster where a rookie can't carve out a significant role in the middle third of the order. So I'm really curious to see what the start of his season looks like. Really good plate skills overall. The other guy that I think is interesting is Brett Beatty, because he's talked about changing up his swing. Really interesting breakdown that he did on SNY. I just watched this clip yesterday with Todd Zeal. He was talking about making his top hand stronger, trying to be able to get to low and in pitches in particular, because he's aware of the problems that we see. He knows he hits the ball on the ground too much. So he's trying to make some adjustments, you know, take advantage of the fact that he hits the ball really hard. I think he makes good swing decisions. Defensively, I know he struggled a little bit last year, but the Mets are in that kind of in-between place this year. It's not like a full rebuild. It's more of a, let's take a step back. Let's just play the middle and see if we get lucky. Brett Beatty's the kind of guy that could get a lot better and help them get lucky in that regard. So I do like those skills quite a bit. This is a guy that was the best hitter at AA in 2022 as a 22-year-old. So age-appropriate best player at AA is like a really good thing to have on your resume. So I'm definitely in on Brett Beatty. It's a really good breakdown on SNY. They put it up on YouTube if anyone wants to check it out. I have too much Jordan Westberg on my teams. Same kind of thing, right? Like the thing about Westberg, though, is that he spent so much time at AAA. He's got a full season now between 2 years at AAA. And it's over 30 home runs. It's double-digit steals. He hits the ball really hard. He did that consistently even when he got the call-up from the Orioles. I think he can have a spot to call his own. I just wonder, with some of the veterans, the guy like Ramon Urias, who can play a couple spots in the infield, who's a good defender, does Westberg only get an 80% playing time share because the Orioles want to use guys on their bench? Or can he have an everyday job? I feel like that's something that kind of potentially separates Colt Keith from Jordan Westberg, even though I think Westberg's skill set might be a little more well-rounded for us as fantasy players.
The Orioles trying to figure out, it's been the Orioles and the Reds all offseason for me, trying to put the puzzle together, and the Reds became a little bit more clear, but the Orioles still have so many pieces that I have no clue what the plan is. Most of them are still in the minor leagues, but I think it'll be Westberg at third, Holiday at second, Henderson at short. But there's a lot of question in my mind about, is it O'Hearn at first? Is it Mountcastle? What are they going to do with Colton Cowser? There's so many moving parts there. I haven't been heavily investing really in many members of the Orioles outside of the ones I've got a couple of Cedric Mullins shares once or twice with Santander, guys that I don't really have the playing time concerns with. And again, I don't really have massive playing time concerns with the younger guys. I just worry that there are just so many mouths to feed that somebody might end up getting left behind. And maybe it's somebody that we're not expecting. Maybe it's Jackson Holliday. I don't think it'll be Jackson Holliday, but if he struggles the first few weeks of April, maybe he goes down and then that's how it works. We just don't know anything. I think a lot of the time with this is kind of getting off topic, but with these prospects, with these rookies in preseason, we push them up because they're just exciting. The new toy, Wyatt Langford in the fifth round, fourth round kind of thing. But it's so risky. Like there are so many safe options in drafts. Even just going back to Ellie De La Cruz, you can take Ellie De La Cruz in the second round, or you can take Francisco Lindor. Why would you take Ellie De La Cruz? For me, I'm just a safer, conservative type of player. Not even just Lindor. Riley, Devers, so many SP1s in that range. I prefer to play it safe, and I think that can kind of work throughout the entire draft, regardless of your position. And it does kind of vary. Are you more of a safe drafter in general, you think, not taking as many risks on these young guys coming up?
I think I would fall closer to the safe side. I mean, I have I don't know. People might argue with me and say, no, you take enough risks. I build a lot of, in auctions, especially stars and scrub type teams, even in mono leagues. I've had that approach for a long time. And a lot of people like to go more balanced in those super deep formats. I'm pretty confident in my ability to find inexpensive players in most leagues that will be better than expected. Like, I'm just good. I feel like I'm good in the bargain bin, generally speaking. It doesn't matter how deep the league is. I'll find guys who play more than expected or who are a little better than people realize. And I try to lean into that. So I guess my aggressiveness is more in being top heavy on the roster and less about specific young players. I try to be as agnostic as I can be about which players I get. I mean, I don't have a do not draft list for the most part. It's really more of a, I'm not drafting this player unless he falls to this point, or I'm not drafting this player unless these few things that don't usually happen. And I think the more I played, the more I've realized that the different strategies you can employ, the more strategy you can employ, I think the more dangerous of a player you can be. Because you don't need the board to break your way to build the team you want or to build the best possible team. You understand the different exits and strategies you can kind of implement based on what's happening in any given room at any given time. And as I've played more too, I mean, I think some of the industry leagues, like Mixed Tout Wars especially, I think the last time I was in that auction 2 years ago, everybody just about went stars and scrubs. That strategy becomes less effective when everyone's doing it. When everyone's going to pay a few dollars extra, you know, $2 or $3 over on the top players isn't a big deal. $5 to $7 starts to add up. So then you start to back away. And then I built a team where I lived kind of in the second tier, and it was a great team. But if 10 years ago, if I was in that situation, I might've botched it. I might've got too antsy. I might've said, I gotta get my guys. You don't have to get your guys. You have to understand what's going to happen if someone else gets your guys, because it happens. We like a lot of the same players. That's just the way this game works.
Yeah, especially with the way everybody's talking. We'll do shows like this and we'll talk. We'll be, oh, we both like Brett Beatty. And then, you know, if we have another draft this year, it might be like, oh, Derek mentioned Beatty. You know, just so know the room. There's so many different things. But yeah, be a versatile player. Don't get stuck into, I have to take this guy, I have to take that guy. This is my guy, so he's on my team. You know, you have to be able to take the board as it comes. The last thing I'll ask you, and I apologize, it wasn't on the sheet, but who is your absolute favorite third baseman to draft this year, and who's the one that you are just staying away from at all costs?
I think favorite's probably Bregman. You know, we talked a lot about him. It's just I think he should be a top 60 pick. So I love getting him at pick 90 or somewhere in that range. I just think you're getting everything except steals, which you don't expect to get from this position. Yeah. The team's still really good. I don't see them crashing back to earth immediately or anything like that, where the runs and RBIs are going to go away. I think we've seen him even kind of work through a couple of injuries that have reduced his power for stretches, but now we've seen it come back long enough to believe those skills are still there. And it's a walk year too for Bregman, if I'm not mistaken. So he's got that extra little motivation, which certainly never hurts. But my void at the position...
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's probably, I mean, Spencer Steer is a multi-position guy. I don't really want Spencer Steer. I think the reason is not necessarily anything that has to do with Spencer Steer himself. It's that he goes at like pick 110. And when I look at the other options, other players I can get at pick 110, even though he's got multi-position eligibility, even though he's in a nice home park, and especially with that Marte suspension, his playing time is safer. I look at Xander Bogaerts at the same spot. Like, why would I not just take Xander Bogaerts? He's awesome. He ran a bunch last year. He's got at least some power, great batting average, everyday playing time. Xander Bogaerts is awesome. I love Bogaerts. Why would I not take Jackson Churio if I want to take a swing there? Like, this is the range where I start to think, if I don't have a high ceiling, like reach a YOLO type player yet, this is where I start to think about him, because some of the YOLO players that go here could be round 4, round 5 picks at the end of draft season. So I look at all the different types of players that go in there. Sometimes SP3s fall. Sometimes you get a guy like, if you're looking for some proven production, you can get a George Springer, you can get a Ketel Marte. Like, how or why would I expect Spencer Steer to be better than all of those guys, other than the risky rookie approach? And even that, I feel like you're still taking a decent bit of risk with Spencer Steer. He's only done it for 1 year, and it was relatively surprising just how good he was last year.
Yeah, I'm not sure the steals are going to be there as much as they were. There's always going to be questions with Cincinnati about how much he's going to play. I think the fact that he can play a few different positions will keep him on the field. But yeah, he's somebody where I thought I'd be a lot more interested than I actually am now that I've done a bunch of drafts. That multi-position eligibility, I thought I'd fall in love with it, but I just haven't. And I don't think I've clicked his name even once. So I agree with you there. And I honestly think I agree with both of them. Alex Bregman might be my favorite third baseman. If you're not going to go and get an Austin Riley or lock that down with a Ramirez, Riley Devers type, I think that makes a lot of sense to go with Bregman. But Derek, I think that'll do it. I really appreciate you coming on today, man. It's been a great finally getting to quote unquote meet you here.
Yeah. We've met in Arizona at First Pitch. And as people who've been to First Pitch know, you know, sometimes you meet someone a little later in the evening and, you know, it's hard to remember the details of the conversation or who you had the conversation with. You remember what you talked about, but you conflate talking to one person versus another about that particular thing. So highly recommend First Pitch Arizona, by the way, one of the most fun trips of the year. But thank you for having me, Joe.
Arizona is, it's probably the best event of the year for fantasy. I don't go to all of them. I don't go to Vegas. I don't go to New York, but I'm kind of biased, but I think it is probably the best fantasy baseball event there is. You get to hang out with so many cool people like Derek, not like me, but you get to see guys like Eno, Paul Spohr, and just kind of ask some questions about whatever. You walk up to Derek Hardy and ask him, why'd this guy project it for that? And, you know, it's kind of surreal. But Derek, I do want to just give you a chance one more time if you got any upcoming articles or any shows you want to plug before we get you out of here.
Yeah, so we actually have a live episode of Rates and Barrels, two live episodes of Rates and Barrels. They're going to happen next week, March 20th and March 21st at Other Half Brewing. It's in Brooklyn, the Domino Park location. They got a few locations. 7 o'clock is when the show will start. Eno and I will be around probably for a couple hours before that. We'll probably hang around for a little while afterwards. So if you happen to be in that area, we'd love to see you out there. That'll be a lot of fun to have a couple live shows going into the season. Rates and Barrels going 4 days a week in your feed otherwise. And again, live streams, 1 o'clock Eastern on Fridays, most Fridays with Trevor May. I think the Friday after our two live shows, we're actually all on planes, so we won't have a live stream that day. But most Fridays, we go live at 1 o'clock on our YouTube channel.
Yeah, it's been really fun to see you guys add Trevor to the mix. You guys already have great chemistry, so that's been a lot of fun to add a great name to an already great show. Check out Derek. Follow him over on Twitter, at Derek Van Riper. You can follow me at JoeElRico99, and make sure you're checking out our draft guide. We've got 25-plus articles. We have our draft tracker powered by ATC Projections rankings. We have Dynasty content. We have so much stuff. I can't even list it off here. I'll keep Derek all day. So check out the link in the description for all of that great stuff. We'll be back again tomorrow. Tomorrow is Shortstops with Ben Tidd, one of our own writers here at Sports Ethos. But until then, everybody, take care and have a great night.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.